welcome to another episode of the Unpublished podcast. My name is Amy.
I'm James.
And today, I think we're going to talk about ambition.
Ambition and just the joy of doing things well and progress on things and accomplishing things, which I think sometimes this is a tricky conversation because it always pushes up against hustle culture, right?
And also perfectionist culture.
Yeah. And I really want to make it clear from the outset that we're not talking about productivity for productivity's sake or that there's any kind of moral virtue in doing stuff and accomplishing stuff. I think what I want to talk about is just the pure joy of having a task and completing it and feeling like you did a good job of completing it.
I agree. And I feel like even as we do the work of like deconstructing perfectionist narratives and deconstructing hustle narratives, we deserve space for also talking about the nuanced fact that like it's really beautiful to complete projects, it's beautiful to have big dreams, it's beautiful to be ambitious, and it's hard to find a nuanced space, I think, in this conversation.
Because the reality is there are two sides to it, right? It's, I mean, I don't know if I've been in this space many, many times where I've lost all motivation and I've done nothing. And yes, that's like resting in a sense, but that's not really, I think, what we're talking about when we're resting. Sometimes, of course, you need a complete reset of your nervous system. Sometimes you do need to just do nothing for a long time. But then I think there's, I've been in places in my life where I have had no projects on the go. I have nothing I'm working towards, nothing that I'm interested in. And that's a really dark place to be in. Especially if it's, you know, you can rest, but still be doing it in service of living a life that you want to live. And that's, so that we can get too far into rest where we essentially are doing nothing. And that has its, I mean, that's as painful as burnout, or often it's a result of burnout, or they're obviously related in some ways. But I think that there's a real psychological pain in not having goals we're working towards and in not having things that we want to accomplish. But at the same time, obviously, when the goal and the accomplishment becomes the only drive, that's also a pain point.
It's just so hard. It's such a hard conversation to have. It's a hard conversation to have with ourselves. And I often have this kind of conversation. I'm asked a lot, like, what's the, it was actually asked the other day in the question box, like, what's the difference between like resistance and procrastination? And yeah, like it's kind of along those lines as well.
Yeah. How do you know when you should be taking a break because your body's telling you to take a break versus how do you know when it's just like something you need to push through or something really hard, obviously. Maybe that's, is that a discussion for another day or do you want to cover that now?
No, I just thought it was vaguely relevant.
Yeah, it is definitely vaguely
James
relevant.
James is steering the ship here, guys, just so you know.
Am I?
Yeah.
We had a lovely conversation earlier about your ambition as well.
That's true.
So I thought maybe that's what you were going to contribute to the conversation.
I'm sure I can contribute. I do have a lot of ideas.
I mean, I think it's an interesting coming from the both of us because you probably see yourself as a very ambitious person and I see myself as an only moderately ambitious person or even a low ambitious person.
Yeah, we are really different in how driven we are. I'm a very driven person and a lot of that is an inheritance from hustle culture that I have had to deconstruct. But there's also a part of me that just like is vivacious and has a fire and wants to make impact. And I've had to kind of make peace with that and fall in love with that again because I think, and I kind of extricate that part of myself, which I do love, from a part of myself that was telling me I was worthless unless I ...
You know, it's so annoying because hustle culture has taken something that is purely good, which is working on stuff we're interested in and doing stuff we're interested in and making that a big part of our personality or of our time and really enjoying just having something to strive for and has turned that into some kind of like gross morality productivity story that just has, you know, a lot of middle-aged men yelling at you that you're not doing enough. And for me, it's often the difference is intrinsic versus extrinsic. Obviously, often it's like what is society telling me I should be doing versus like what do I actually really want to be working towards in my own heart?
Yeah,
and that's a huge factor there. And it really annoys me that capitalism, productivity culture, hustle culture has made it much more into what is society telling me I should be doing.
Yeah,
and having that voice constantly on me saying I'm not doing enough.
Yeah,
I'm not doing the right thing. When really I have plenty of intrinsic motivation. It just gets clouded often by bullshit extrinsic motivation.
Yes,
and when
so
I follow my intrinsic motivation, and for example, for me, obviously the very easy thing is when I write every morning for an hour, which I've gotten very good at doing, but there was a period where I wasn't doing that because, and I wanted to do that. several years ago. When I do that, I feel amazing. Like, it feels amazing to be working towards my goal. I absolutely love, even though I say I'm not a very ambitious person, I love the feeling of working towards a completed book. It is an amazing feeling. And that feeling of progress is just genuinely a joy of life.
Yes.
It is a huge joy of life to make consistent progress towards a goal. And it's a pure, there's a sense of it that's like a very pure human, unadulterated joy that is, I can in some ways detach it completely from productivity stories and hustle culture. It's almost like when I'm more in flow, I can detach it from hustle stories and productivity culture. And when I'm in the moment and when, I know you probably disagree with this a little bit, but it's almost a sense of when I'm doing it for me.
Yeah, yeah. Interesting. Oh, because that's the true, like, intrinsic form of it. Mm. I had multiple things to say, but they've all kind of left me.
Sick. Great. That's awesome. Yeah, I love that for you.
I love it when that happens.
What were you saying to me? What were you saying to me earlier about wanting to grow your audience?
Oh, my God. Hold on. I just really want to think about what I was trying to say.
Okay.
Absolute classic Amy on the podcast.
Okay. While you're thinking about that, I'm just going to say something that's a little bit of a side note.
Okay.
I know you guys love my ramblings. I'm just excited to be back talking about creativity and art and goal setting at the moment and things like that.
Yeah.
Because I feel like we've been doing a lot of interview podcasts lately. We haven't had a lot of time, just Amy and I talking to you guys. And it's actually the thing that we like to do the most.
Yeah, we do.
Even though obviously we love all our beautiful people that we interview and we enjoy doing the interviews. This is what unpublished is to us, is these sort of conversations.
Yeah, I remember.
Okay, good.
So for me, in this journey of distinguishing what is, oh, you have to do more because I've been like ingrained with these narratives, and I have to do more because I'm a human and I'm here to create, and it's such a huge part of my like innate aiminess, is the feeling of excitement. I have a complicated relationship with excitement, because often it feels like anxiety, and I have an anxiety disorder and it can be complicated. But when I feel excited about making stuff, I really fucking honor that. And I choose to trust that it is something good, and that I'm not partaking in perfectionism, or I'm not partaking in a hustle culture narrative. Like, excitement is a real key for me to understand, okay, this is something I really want to do. Yeah. I was also going to say, I had two things and I remembered both of them.
Great, well done.
That I think this idea that humans want to meet goals and humans like want to do stuff is like, humans are here to create things. And I think that's super innate. And so for me, that's how I like to like look at the narrative. So instead of like, humans are here to do, humans are here to like make, and like we don't feel satisfied unless we're like pushing forwards. In a more simple like term, like, we're just here to make stuff, I think. We're here to make change. And I think when we're not doing that, we can feel very disconnected and very stagnant and very not good, because we're here to make things.
I agree 100%. And as I was saying earlier, the times in my life when I've been the most depressed have been when either I feel like I'm making something that I don't want to be making, I'm not excited by, or I'm, you know, maybe... it's been times when I haven't had any big projects to work on. Maybe I've been out of a job or in between jobs or something. And I've just been sitting around the house doing nothing.
Mm.
And there's obviously a big difference between sitting around the house and doing nothing, as I said earlier, and deliberately resting, which are two completely different things.
Yeah.
And obviously I don't want to denigrate you if you're not in a position where you can put effort into a big project right now, but just for me personally, I've always felt like once I've found the thing I actually want to work on and make progress towards, I'm generally happier. And that doesn't mean putting 12 hours a day into that thing. It usually just means putting 30 minutes to an hour a day into something.
Yeah, ambition doesn't mean all in. It doesn't mean every hour of the day.
And you're right. Like, it's just there's some hack about just having a project that you're making progress towards, which I feel like, I mean, I've never met anyone who's making project towards a goal and they're going, oh, it's the fact that I'm making progress towards a goal that's bad. It's like, it's often I'm overdoing it or
I'm underdoing it.
Yeah, or I'm underdoing it. And it's rather not hitting that sweet spot, I think.
Yeah.
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 So I think, as I was kind of getting at earlier as well, hustle culture is the perversion of that.
Oh my and God, it's great.
It's taking that desire as humans to make impact in the world and turning it into a tool for capitalists, a tool for often bosses, or a tool for the machine to make money out of.
Yeah.
And to try and push and push and push us.
Oh my God, I really love that read of it. Mm. It makes perfect sense. It's a perversion of what is naturally like ours and what is naturally ours to do. And it's being manipulated and taken by others and abused by others.
Yeah, because writing to me is pure joy. And I think this is where for ages, I think you would know this about me, Amy. It's that fear of what you can accomplish almost. It's related to that fear of, I'm not afraid of failure. I'm afraid of what I can actually do. And it's like, I didn't want to be someone who wrote novels because I didn't want to buy into hustle narratives. Mm. And that was almost like, which makes me really angry at hustle culture because hustle culture stopped me by telling me I had to do so much. It stopped me from wanting to do anything.
Yes.
And that fear of engaging in a toxic system stopped me from wanting to do anything. And it stopped me from being able to build a consistent habit of doing something that I really wanted to do.
Mm.
And it took essentially like me coming to writing on my own terms and through my own motivation, through my own joy, to realize that I don't have to buy into hustle culture. I don't have to buy into the capitalist narratives around creativity, and that I can do it in my own way.
Mm.
That was the only way that I could do it, and I could do it and enjoy it, because I was so afraid of that story. I was so afraid of becoming someone, and I was so afraid of being tired. I think I was so afraid of being sapped of energy. I was so afraid of burning out that I was like, I don't want to write.
Yeah.
I don't even want to start my writing journey.
Yeah. What a huge realization.
Mm.
I think for so many creatives, that is a bizarre road that a lot of us find us going down.
Yeah.
The fear of exhaustion is really big for me.
Mm-hmm.
And something I'm still on that journey. But yeah, you're right. Like, this hustle narrative can either fuck us by making us work too hard, or then we go so hard against it that it stops us from pursuing what we are here to do.
Yeah. And I think, obviously, I'm not saying there's anything wrong with, and I'm a big proponent of the do nothing movement, and I'm a big proponent of Jenny Odell and Devon Price's books and stuff about laziness and doing nothing. And I think because what you know, people see those titles of those books and they think, oh, you're saying just sit around and do nothing. Of course, that's not what anyone's saying. What they're saying is you should basically take the power back from systems that are trying to make you do stuff constantly and do things on your own terms, which is exactly what we've been saying up to now on the podcast.
Yeah.
My turn to forget what I was going to say.
Great, I'll take over.
Okay.
I love this idea that ambition is reclaiming power, and it's asking you directly, what do you want to do? And yeah, there's work like understanding what is intrinsic and what is extrinsic motivation. And sometimes we're going to get a bit muddled, like, but that's okay. I think at the end of the day, if you keep coming back to being like, okay, my ambition comes from me, it's what I want to do. And I think with our business, with everything that we do, with our exercise, with the way we treat our bodies, with our business, with our creativity, we always come back to this extremely exciting place. And there's that word again, like excitement of, okay, what is it we want to do next? And there's a lot of work, like even today, and I'll go into what I was talking about today in a second. I had to catch a few stories. You know, I've been told this, so I've not done that.
Mm.
And so I'll just talk about what I was saying this morning, which was I was journaling this morning a bit about where I want this creativity to go, where I want our business to go over the next few years. And I was like, okay, like, I feel a little unclear. Like, what more could we do? What more could we offer? And I was like, what I actually want to do is I want to grow a bigger audience. And I want to keep creating fucking incredible free content on platforms that I love so that I can connect more with creatives rather than like producing more and doing more to try and, you know, propel our business forward. And I was like, I've been told so many times that focusing on growing audience is a dead end. And I've been told by people that it's egotistical and that it's like a vanity project. But at the end of the day, I know that these platforms that I've created and that I'm going to continue to create are the source of our community and the source of our patronage as well. And I feel intuitively that that's what I want to do. Also, I fucking love making stuff for people for free. And I love making content and art that I get to share with the world very quickly and immediately. Like, my ambition is to grow in that space. But I haven't ever articulated that because I had these stories that that's not how business works. Or, you know, I was told repeatedly by business coaches that I'm putting way too much emphasis on my content. But intuitively, I was like, this is, first of all, what I fucking love to do. And also, that's how I want our business to grow.
And I think it comes down to this capitalist narrative that businesses function to make money. And that's the only reason they function. So these people are saying to you, oh, it's a waste of time for your bottom line to make free content. Like, you'll be better spent just trying to milk your current audience for as much money as you can out of them. And that will be that makes a better business. Mm-hmm. But this is like completely ignoring all the other things that are going to make our life enjoyable. So it's like saying that only the dollar value we extract from a business is the value it makes for us. But the value that our business makes for us is so far outside of the dollar value. The dollar value is very nice. The dollar value helps us live. The dollar value helps us do other nice things. But a huge proportion of the value that our business makes for us is the connection. It's feeling like we're making an impact in the world. It's feeling like people are getting something out of us, and that knowledge that people are, we're helping people. Those are all incredibly valuable things that are taken out of the narrative of achievement in society at the moment.
Yeah. Yeah. And I get excited when I talk about it. Yeah. And that's when I know that it's coming from Amy. It's not coming from an external source.
And also we know that the more connection we make, the more we impact people's lives, the more we help people, the better it's also going to be for our bottom line.
Yeah.
So this is where also the capitalist equation loses out, is they think that you're just trying to make the most money in the short term right now. Whereas what we're actually trying to do is build our base and build our value to people.
Yeah.
And build, which is, you know, how you should be approaching all your projects. I think that's how you take the hustle out of a lot of projects. It's like thinking long-term. It's thinking about building the base. It's thinking about making yourself ready for the long term rather than just trying to maximize in the short term.
Yeah. And when I was having this conversation with Emma yesterday, Emma, our beautiful, we call her our COO. And she was like, where do you see this going? And I was like, okay, well, like what more could we create? But then I really thought about it. I was like, where would I like to be in a few years' time? I was like, I'd like to be gardening. I'd like to be writing. I'd like to have bigger platforms with bigger creative communities so that we can be held and supported, you know, in a very like symbiotic way. Like I can support them, they can support me, and we can be on this creative journey together. But I'm not doing more work. I don't have an empire. I am doing the work that I'm doing today. And I get to have peace and joy around that. And I'm cooking and I'm creating. And like, that's my ambition. And it feels so exciting to me.
Mm, yeah.
Yeah.
I had a tangent to go on a little bit, which was what I'd forgotten to say earlier, if you don't mind me jumping in with that. And it was about, this conversation has me thinking about arguments against something like a basic income. And I don't want to talk necessarily about basic income today, but one of the big arguments that people make against basic income is, oh, people are just going to sit around all day doing nothing. And
this just would never happen.
It's like, well, actually what happens when we free up our basic needs is that we are more likely to want to do interesting, creative things.
Yeah.
It's like the reason I'm not afraid at all of people just sitting around and watching TV all day. I just don't think that's a reality. For most people who are given opportunity, who are given economic opportunity, who are given cultural opportunity, who are given education opportunity, are not going to then just watch TV all day.
Mm.
And once again, I just don't want to sound like I'm saying that anyone who does watch TV all day is anyway immoral.
I know, like that's totally the idea that we would be scared of someone who watches TV all day. Like, what the fuck is scary about that?
If that's what you're going to enjoy, then like, who the fuck cares? Like, there's no... I don't believe.
I don't believe it
even,
either.
Even to take those people's argument at face value, I don't believe they're even right in their conclusion. I don't believe that they're right. That 95% of people, who, if they had their basic needs met, I do not believe they're just going to sit around watching TV all day. I believe they're going to do something that's creative, that's impacting the community, that's in some way helping other people around them. I think that's just like the baseline. So... this idea that capitalism, once again, I can't believe I keep using the word capitalism.
I know, you're so anti it.
I hate using the word capitalism. The idea that the laws and systems that we currently live within, which I'm going to say, every time I say capitalism, assume that's what I'm saying. The idea that capitalism wants to perpetuate in us is that you are achieving stuff purely because you have some kind of like economic incentive to do it.
Yes.
And... that's just not, I don't think that's the base human condition at all.
I agree. Again, I think the base human condition is to create.
Yes.
And to make.
And then if we had basic needs met, I do believe that many of us would continue to
be so much more creative.
Yeah. I guess this is why, you know, a lot of people say you have to come from a rich family in order to create.
Yes.
I mean, I think a lot of that is because once people have their basic needs met, they end up doing art.
Yeah. And I know, like, that's so beautiful. What a beautiful connection to make. Like, we're so many people are so skeptical of UBI, of having people make money, and then at the same time, those people would probably perpetuate the story that only the rich get to create. Mm. And it's like, okay, because when we are financially stable, that's exactly what we do.
Yeah, we are drawn to the arts.
Yeah,
like so many second, third generation people from wealthy families are drawn to the arts.
Yeah, it's so interesting.
Yeah, it is really interesting.
And you know, people think it's kind of gross. Like, it's like, oh, only the rich get to create. But like, it's like when we're financially stable, we make stuff. Like, it's actually very beautiful. And it's something that we need to look towards.
And what society should be working towards is getting everyone into the position where they're financially stable enough that they can make art if they want to.
Yeah. So like, cool.
That should be the goal.
Such a cool conversation.
Not that everyone has to make art, but I just think it's often something that we're drawn towards.
Would you like to talk about how we are ambitious, or like how we maybe structure our ambition, or how our ambition looks?
And yeah, I mean, for me, it is purely wanting to finish novels, essentially.
What about for our business?
Oh, for our business? Very similar to you, is I am ambitious to connect with more people. I'm ambitious to make valuable free content for people.
Yeah.
And I'm ambitious to help artists.
Yeah.
And those goals in themselves really motivate me.
Yeah.
And also, making a living while we do that motivates me too.
Yeah. Money. Oh, sorry. I really yelled into the mic just then. Money is actually something that I am quite ambitious towards, and probably more so than James. Mm. I think it's because I'm a delighter of comforts, and I get so excited about what we could do by, you know, being in like financial abundance, and I get very dreamy. Like, well, I have a lot of desire.
Making money from the business also has the cool effect of allowing you to do the other three things a lot more easily. Like, once you have money going through the business, you can create more free content.
Yes.
You can connect more.
Oh my God, yeah. Like, so much of my dreams, like, why I want to make more money is because, like, I'm like, we could do this really cool thing.
We'll make a studio. Yeah. We could do a big video project. Like, we can all sorts of things like that.
At the moment, we're talking with an old friend of mine, actually, about building a set for our new YouTube. When we moved to England, and I'm like so excited by that, and like money allows us to do that. Money allows for so much creativity, which comes right back to what we were saying. Mm. Like, money allows us to play and get arty and invest in other artists. Like, so much of my desire to make money is so I can pay other artists to do cool stuff for me.
But I also want to emphasize that you don't have to, you know, just thinking about where you started the business from, where we'd moved back in with my parents, you had $10,000 in credit card debt. Like, you weren't in a good place financially when you started this business.
No, you don't have to be financially stable.
But it's just that the more money you get, the more you can feed. It's a positive feedback loop.
It's such a positive feedback loop.
And which is a great, very powerful thing, and is a good reason to want to make more money.
Yeah. I just want to talk about that because that's also something I have a lot of shame over. Mm. Is like, I'm quite ambitious financially.
Yeah.
And like, I'm often making goals. If we want to talk about like how structurally we make goals, like, we made a few goals for the first few launches of this year of what we're creating. And my goals are always like fucking such loose units of goals. I'm like, we should make $1 billion with this launch. And obviously, like, we haven't, I mean, it wasn't $1 billion. We haven't come close to our financial goals.
Well, I mean, depends what you say is close. I think we actually I've made a reasonable amount. Like,
oh, no, we made a beautiful amount of money.
I mean, I think we made what we should, like, what the goals probably should have been. Yeah, but Amy just doubled or tripled that in her goals.
I don't know. I feel like I was playing with, like, well, what if the goal was outrageous for a second? It didn't disappoint me.
It helped you to push.
It helped me to push a lot harder. And it didn't, I wasn't upset. You know, I was felt so blessed by the amount of money we've made in this first quarter.
And I think just going back to that word push, and I think something that I shy away from, and that a lot of us shy away from, is that word push. But there can be a real joy in pushing for something that you want.
Yeah.
And that fills your cup up and is enjoyable. Not to say that you won't need to rest after you push for that, but something that I am worried I scare myself away from is pushing, because there have been points in my life where I've been really happy pushing. I'm thinking about like the last month of my honors thesis where I had to write 20,000 words.
Yeah.
I actually quite enjoyed that. I quite enjoyed that zone, but then it fucked me for like 3 months after that. So yeah. I wouldn't want to live in that. Or thinking about a really hard workout, which I can really enjoy, or a really hard game of touch footy, which I can really enjoy, or, you know, breaking the back of a difficult scene in my writing. These can be challenges that can be really enjoyable to overcome.
They're so enjoyable. And I do think this is part of your journey is understanding that it's safe to push as for intrinsically driven stuff. Like, I feel like, if you don't mind us talking a bit about this, do you?
Sure.
Like, James can really panic when I'm like, I've got a really big idea.
Yeah.
And his body kind of shuts down. Like, he shuts down, you know, I do push too hard and we balance each other out in that way. Like, James will always rein me in when I need to be reined in. But at the same time, I ask James to step up when he naturally probably wouldn't. That's why we're like a fucking awesome couple. But I do feel like when I sometimes, especially if I've really bring something big to the table, you'll shut down.
Yeah, because I immediately get afraid of the giant project. Whereas, of course, what I need is to break things up into small little things. Yes. And I need to feel like I'm making little steps towards a big goal. And I need to feel like I'm getting that little hit of dopamine or a little endorphin hit every day and chunking it up. Whereas I feel like you get much more excited by like the big goal. You're like, wow, look at this big thing we could do. And I just see a big goal as how tired am I going to be?
Yes. I mean, like, I think about that too, but I get so enchanted by the ideas and then I want to share them with you. And like, sometimes we have great conversations. It's like, yeah, we could do this, we could do this, we could do this. Something that I feel like I have to work on, and this is just a relational thing of working with your partner, is like, I want to action everything immediately. And so whilst sometimes we can have incredible conversations where I've had a really big idea or James had a really big idea, because you often come like, it's 50-50 on who has the cool idea. And then I'll be like, okay, well, what can we do right now?
Because I'm like, whoa, this is the ideation phase. Like, we got a lot of another 2 months of this before we do anything.
I think this would be our biggest difference in terms of how we function as a couple and how we function in business. And again, I think both of us pull ourselves into a very beautiful medium. I am so immediate. Like, I just want to, as soon as a cool idea is there, I'm like, oh my God, I need it done.
But do you know what's really interesting is that I'm maybe even more immediate with my writing than you are. Like, in this one thing, I'm more immediate than you. I write more compulsively than you, I think.
You do.
And I have much bigger notes files. I do much more preparation for novels. I don't know if I write more words than you, but
100% you do.
Well, probably, and it's the only thing, because it's the one thing I'm not afraid of getting tired of or something, maybe. Or
so interesting.
I'm just not afraid of doing that because it feels fun and playful to me.
It's so interesting. And
writing a novel just does not in any way feel scary to me, which is crazy to say, because if I'd heard myself say that 5 years ago, I would have been like, what the fuck is he talking about? We can't write a novel, and now I've written three and I'm on my way to the fourth.
It's so cool. Maybe it just takes you a long time to feel safe in these kind of things, especially because you've been broken by so many like projects in the past and by work in the past, and maybe it just takes time for you to build a relationship with these kind of things.
I think when I hear work, I'm picture office cubicle, which is that's not my reality anymore, but that stays with me and that's what I imagine. I'm trying to think other things, like I'm not afraid of a big exercise project.
Like me and James, we love a good exercise project.
But that's also something I can really clearly break down into chunks. I know I'm not going to be exercising for 12 hours a day, you know. I know I'm probably only going to be doing 1 or 2 hours a day.
I know. I feel like when I bring a big project to the table, you think, okay, well, this is going to consume my whole entire life now. Yeah.
All I see is like the total chunk of hours I'm going to have to put into that.
Yeah.
Rather than you being like, well, maybe it'd be great if you could do 30 minutes in the afternoon or something.
Oh, so it's my fault.
Sorry. Of course, it's not your fault.
Oh, so it's my fault.
I just think we as a couple could frame it more like that.
Yeah. I think also because we work, and this is a pretty rogue podcast. I think it's great. Okay, great. I think it's good too. It's just a bit random. Mm-hmm. We were talking yesterday.
Unlike normal.
So weird. Yesterday, again, in this beautiful conversation I was having with Emma, we were talking about, you know, it's been amazing having Emma come in and watch us work, because I think we have just kind of been like just operating, but not really being able to see ourselves and see the way we work. But Emma, you know, comes in and she literally sits with us and works with us and has been watching the way that we create. She's like, you work very project-based. So all of your consistent things, sometimes they fall off. So like the podcast, sometimes you may have, you know, a little bit comes out every Monday, but sometimes doesn't vibe. She's like, because you're working on big projects and then they finish and it's like, you know, maybe, I don't know where I was going with this. Is it relevant?
Yeah, I think it's relevant.
Anyway, I just thought that was really interesting. I feel like I had a way to integrate it.
Well, I think you were saying to me that maybe a way that we can,
right,
rather than just having like do the podcast as a goal, it's like you make it, chunk it, and you go, no, James, we're gonna, for the next 2 weeks, like our project is gonna be the podcast. We can break that up into
small
X sessions of recording the podcast, and you can pre-prepare it all and have it all ready.
Yeah.
So I guess it's just, once again, as everything does, comes back to knowing your own rhythm.
Yeah, it does.
But I think, yeah, to bring it back to the core of what I want to talk about today, which is that for people like me who aren't that, who maybe don't see themselves or have a story that they're not ambitious, or they don't like to get things done, or that they're lazy. Definitely I have a huge story that I'm lazy. We can often then try and, it's a self-fulfilling prophecy then. And often we just become people who get afraid of accomplishing anything and get afraid of finishing any tasks. Whereas I've found by probably, I mean, maybe it's Amy or something, or maybe it's just by breaking through a few of those barriers and getting a taste for finishing things and achieving things, that actually, even though I was afraid of them, it is a cool thing to strive for, towards, and a cool thing to have in your life.
And it doesn't equate to feeling exhausted or feeling used by a system or feeling powerless. In fact, it can often feel like the opposite.
Especially if you go in with a plan and you don't overstretch yourself deliberately.
Yes. Are you looking at me?
No, not at all. Yes, I am.
I am. I think I'm just much more intuitive with the way I work, which means I can get carried away and quite tired. Also have, you know, my energy issues. So,
because even though,
laugh out loud,
Amy, also you're very afraid of being tired, but I feel like you don't see it before it starts. It's like, I will basically not drink alcohol anymore because I'm so afraid of the way it makes me feel. Whereas a lot of people obviously don't, like, they know it's going to make them feel bad, but they're not thinking about that in the moment. Whereas I'm thinking about that in the moment. When I have my first sip of a beer, I'm like, oh my God, I'm going to have a headache within an hour. And I want to stop. It's the same thing. Like when I start working on, when I start filing our taxes, I'm like, fucking hell, I'm going to be so tired tomorrow.
But what about other work stuff, like taxes, obs?
Yes, but then...
But does it?
But then that's when I start to... Then I falsely start to throw the same story up for a lot of other things.
Yeah, it's really interesting.
And I need to... I think I need to learn that I can be a bit... I'm a bit safer than I think I am. I need to learn that some things are safe. And remind myself.
So I, classic Amy, want to talk about the Enneagram, because I was having a conversation with Amanda Jones from The Honest Jones, who's an incredible visual artist and videographer. She's really cool. Let's tag her in the link. About Enneagram, and she's an Enneagram 6, and it's a personality testing, by the way. You know, take it or leave it. I'm not going to push it on you, but I find it interesting. And 6s I really don't understand very well, but she really gave it to me very clearly, and I actually see a lot of 6 in both of us. And it's this idea that unless you feel safe, you cannot take risks. And safety for 6s is like of the highest priority. And safety will look different for everyone there. And I see this here a lot for you. Unless you feel safe, you cannot take risks. And if you feel that sense of, I'm going to be tired, this isn't safe, this project isn't safe, you become very risk averse, very risk averse. But, and this is what they say about 6s, is when they feel safe, they can be some of the biggest risk takers of the bunch.
Yeah.
Isn't that interesting?
Because I associate myself usually with having a high risk
tolerance. Really high risk tolerance.
But I will not risk feeling a bit tired.
And that's your safety.
Yeah.
So like you have these requirements for safety, and actually, and maybe another reason why we make a good partnership, we have very similar safety standards. We're very self-preservation-y. Like we need sleep, we need our house to be taken care of, we need good food for ourselves, like we need a sense of home and safety there. We need like a sense to, I personally, James Lasso, need like to know that I'm not going to get like socially overwhelmed. Like in these things, when those needs are met, we can be brilliant. But I think there's been a lack of safety within our business and within some of our creative pursuits, and I feel like we should, and also for me too, I think this is really important for me as well, we need to look at every single project, like how do we make this feel as safe as possible so we can take the biggest risks.
Yeah, that's really interesting.
Isn't that interesting? I've like never had a 6 explained to me that well.
Yeah.
Tim Ferriss is a 6, and you can see that in him.
Yeah.
He's a fucking investor.
But he will do meticulous research in something until he feels
safe. Until he feels safe.
Yeah, which is obviously often erroneous because often a lot of investing is luck. Yeah. But he still has to feel safe to make
exactly. It doesn't matter that it's erroneous. Like for him to be able to take big risks, he has to create an environment where he feels safe. And that's what we should be doing. And I think when I look at, sorry if this is not really relevant, but I think it's really interesting. Like if I look at my anxiety disorder that developed quickly over the last like 3 or 4 years, I think that a lot of this came from feeling very unsafe doing what I was doing. And I was still taking big risks, but I really bore the consequences of them. And I think for us, in the future, as we build our business and we become more and more successful as creatives and authors, every time we want to do something that scares us, we have to make sure that there's a sense of safety there too.
Yeah.
And that's really unique to us. Like, what's James' safety need and what does Amy's safety need? And
I
think,
like, building that in, it's like, I can feel very safe to write because I know there's essentially like an exit lever I just pull every day after I've done it for an hour or 500 words. Like, it's capped, basically.
That's interesting. Like, having a cap.
And I feel very safe. And I know from experience that I will not even feel tired in the slightest. I will only feel energized from writing that much.
Yeah.
But, and because I've actually learned over time that writing more than that makes me feel very tired.
Yeah.
And now I feel very safe in that range.
And, like, we've been speaking a little bit about writing a bit more. Mm. So we need to look at how we can create safety in that.
Yes.
Because otherwise... And often when you've tried to do this, you've really bailed out.
Yes.
It's not safe for me. I feel too tired after trying for a little bit longer. Mm. And so, like, maybe we, yeah, if we were to do that, it looks at, like, making the safety around that.
Yeah, I think that's a really good idea.
Something else safety-wise we've been doing is we're taking a big risk by moving country. And for me anyway, I've been trying to make this transition as safe as possible by investing. Again, like, another reason why I love to make money is I've been using the fact that we have a little bit more money now than we did like 3 or 4 years ago to make this transition a lot safer. And actually, money could be a big part of me feeling safe.
I think so.
Yeah. If I needed, like, for example, like, I'm going to feel way safer if I'm out socializing, which is hard for me, if I, you know, I have the money for an Uber to take me home straight away.
Yeah, really good point.
You know, like, money makes me feel like I have agency and power because of the society we live in, and it makes me feel safe. Mm. So the more money we have, the more risks I can take.
Yeah. And we will spend heaps of money to feel safe.
Oh my God.
Like, we're flying a premium economy over to Europe, to England, someone else in our financial situation probably would say it was an irresponsible thing to spend money on.
Yeah.
Like, we probably can't afford it in like the typical accountant sense.
Yeah.
But the value we place on feeling safe and comfortable.
Yeah. Huge.
Huge. And I would be thinking about that economy flight.
For now, we've been thinking about forever.
Yeah. I would be thinking, if I was flying economy, which we did on our holiday at the end of last year, because it was a big family holiday. So we all went together as a family in economy. And I thought of that for like, I was thinking about that flight for 2-3 months.
Yeah.
I was so stressed about how uncomfortable I would feel.
Yeah. And again, that's just your safety standard.
Yeah.
And I think about, like, we're paying to have a woman in our new village come in beforehand and have food in the fridge and make our beds because we're arriving quite late in the evening and I want to know that we have, what if we're hungry? Okay, there'll be food there. Are we able to go straight to bed? Yes, we are. The beds are made. You know, someone's come in and prepped the space for us because spatially, like, I need a safe space. Mm. And, like, having that, like, some people are just rogue. Some people are like, whatever.
I know. Yeah.
And I'm always like, oh my God, who are you?
Yeah.
But they will have other safety requirements.
Mm-hmm.
And I love that we get to, and I'm so proud of myself for asking for what we both need.
Yeah, big time. So I guess the moral of this tangent has been that it's really good. I feel like it's really a positive to be ambitious and to achieve things within safety bounds and making sure you feel safe doing that and making sure you have systems that will keep you safe when you do that.
Yeah.
And thinking about, like, if I'm scared of accomplishing a goal, maybe, like, what safety valve can I put on there?
Yeah.
Like, for me, with my writing, I'm really scared of getting tired writing. So I really just cap how much I write every day. And I know I have that cap. And it's like, sure, if I'm feeling amazing, maybe I'll write 700 words. But I really am not going to push that far past that.
Yeah. Julia Cameron says, treat yourself as though you're precious. And, like, that's kind of what we're talking about here. And I think you might feel like, oh, no, I don't want to baby myself. Like, oh, why can't I just be more, go with the flow? Like, why does this have to scare me so much? We all have our things.
Hmm.
And you deserve to make yourself as, like, comfortable and as safe as possible as you do the brave thing and create and do whatever it is that's on your little ambitious heart. Don't feel like you're, you know, mollycoddling yourself. Like, there's an inner child within us that needs, you know, care like a child needs care. So do what they need to do so that you can achieve great things.
Do you want to just address perfectionists quickly? Because I know so many of them are going to be thinking this, going, okay, great, this is permission for me to never start anything because I'm building my safety net up so much.
Ugh, guys. Please, no. We build a little bit of safety. You'll never feel entirely safe because you're doing scary things. So you're never going to be like, okay, yeah, now I'm ready. If you've got something big on your heart, like, find small ways to make yourself feel safer. You're never going to feel entirely safe. That is really important. Mm. You know, we're never going to feel entirely safe moving countries to a new place. Like, it is terrifying. I am scared. But I know that I've got small things in place that, you know, are going to comfort me, and I don't have to obsess over what are we going to do when we arrive at 10 p.m. at Heathrow and blah, blah, blah. I've sorted it. You know, like, these are the small things we can do. What are some other examples of, like, well, I guess we've been talking about examples this whole time.
Yeah, exactly.
Time restraints. Mm. You know, it doesn't take you a year to figure out a time restraint for your artistry time. It takes you a minute to pick it now and then probably halve it because you're going to have overdone it if you're a perfectionist. Mm. This doesn't require a lot. This requires a few boundaries, honestly. Maybe a few extra little things that you can adorn your space with, you know. It doesn't need to be like something that takes a lot of time, and it doesn't need to get in your way. It shouldn't get in your way. It should be permission.
Yeah, I agree. And I guess the thing I just want to leave the podcast on was just trying to, for those of you like me, just really encouraging you to try and reframe your relationship to achievement and try to reframe it as something that can be positive and isn't necessarily scary.
You know, you just have so much to give this world, and it would be so sad if you were to hold yourself back from that because you felt like it was hustle culture speaking to you, it was perfectionism speaking to you. Like, you have intrinsically so much that you will love to do and that we will love to receive.
Hmm. Is that good for you?
Yeah, that was great. That was a great chat. Okay, ciao.
Okay, everyone. Goodbye.
Bye.